This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm T. Xiaoyik with Juliet Jacobs and Lim Su Ann. We have two stories for you today. What's the first one coming up, Juliet?
So 35 years ago, on the night of December the 2nd, 1984, a toxic chemical, methyl isocyanide, leaked out from the Union Carbide India Limited's pesticide factory, and it turned the Indian city of Bhopal into a graveyard. So we're in a Hari Ini Dalam Sejarah segment. We're going to look back at one of the world's worst industrial disasters where survivors continue to suffer its ill effects even today. So as I mentioned earlier, on the night of December 2nd, 1984, an accident at the Union Carbide pesticide plant in Bhopal, India, released at least 30 tons of a highly toxic gas called methyl isocyanide, and as well as a number of other poisonous gases. So the pesticide plant was actually surrounded by shanty towns, and it led to more than 600,000 people being exposed to the deadly gas cloud that night. And the gases sort of stayed low to the ground, and that caused victims' throats and eyes to burn. It induced nausea, and it did eventually cause many, many deaths. And witness accounts tell of how people ran onto the streets vomiting and dying.
Yeah, and by the time the sun rose the following day, hundreds, some say even thousands, lay dead, many on the roads and many at home under their tattered quilts. You know, as you said, it was, you know, shanty towns were surrounding. Yeah. These were very, very low income communities. I mean, it's just awful. We read about corpses with distended bellies that were beginning to rot by that time. It attracted vultures and dogs, and another 2,000 lay dying in hospitals and homes. And on top of that, another painful sight was that of the carcasses of hundreds of cattle and other animals. Yeah. All over the gas affected area, swollen up to the size of elephants. And, you know, if it's not bad enough, the city ran out of cremation grounds. And estimates of the death toll vary from as few as 3,800 to as many as 16,000. But government figures now refer to an estimate of 15,000 killed over the years.
And so that was India's first major industrial disaster. And until then, the government had handled floods. They faced cyclones, even earthquakes. But they had no clue how to respond in this case. So the US-based multinational company, Union Carbide Corporation, or UCC, they own the plant through its subsidiary Union Carbide India Limited. Then, and the parent company did little to help with the human tragedy, and the very officials of the Union Carbide India Limited, UCIL, who were arrested on the first day of the tragedy, they were released on bail on December 16th on the condition that they would help in the neutralization of the gas left in the plant. And the neutralization experts included W. Woomer from the US, who had earlier been denied entry into the plant for fear that he would end up destroying evidence.
Yeah, it was a very dodgy thing from start to finish. Yeah. And, you know, in a news piece produced for Scroll.ing, which is an independent media company based in India, their segment, Your Morning Fix, actually looked at how the system failed victims of the Bhopal gas tragedy and how they actually let Union Carbide slip away. The piece also states that why the tragedy became known as the Bhopal Betrayal.
In the years leading up to the tragedy, there were at least two, although smaller, leaks at the plant. The CBI, which investigated the case, said none of the plant's safety systems were operational. The methyl isocyanide tank's refrigeration system was switched off as a cost-cutting measure. The CBI said criminally negligent operational practices resulted in the leakage of methyl isocyanide, and these were in the knowledge of the management and were deliberately ignored for commercial reasons. The tragedy would soon turn into a farce. Warren Anderson, the CEO of Union Carbide, reaches Bhopal and is arrested at the airport. He is taken to a posh guest house of the Union Carbide company and is placed under house arrest. Anderson, who evidently worked the phones at the guest house to get the US administration to pressure New Delhi, secures bail the same day. He is escorted to the airport, reportedly by the superintendent of police. An official recalls a Super King Airbnb 200 was already kept waiting for him. Arjun Singh, then Chief Minister of Madhya Pradesh, would, decades later, look to pass the buck onto then Union Home Minister P.V. Narasimha Rao. Warren Anderson never returned to face trial and lived the good life in the Hamptons till his death in 2014. In February 1985, the Indian government filed claims for $3.3 billion from Union Carbide in a US court. The next year, the US court transferred all Bhopal litigation to India. In December 1987, the CBI filed its charge sheet against Anderson and other accused under sections of culpable homicide. 2 years later, the Indian government and Union Carbide struck an out-of-court settlement for $470 million that came to a paltry $500 per victim. When asked about that pitiful sum, Kathy Hunt, spokesperson for Dow Chemicals that bought Union Carbide, said $500 is plenty good for an Indian.
So Dow Chemicals, on the other hand, coincidentally earns billions of dollars in profits every year. Mm. So Dow also maintains that it did not inherit Union Carbide's liabilities. And Karunanandi, a lawyer for the victims of the Bhopal tragedy, does not agree.
If you look at very, very similar damage, in the sense of, like, there was asbestos poisoning in the United States caused by a subsidiary of Union Carbide, the Union Carbide Corporation, the New York entity, and prior to the takeover of the New York entity by Dow Chemicals, right? So in terms of corporate structures, it was identical to the violations in Bhopal, right? However, those claims were disclosed to the Securities and Exchange Commission as a charge on Dow Chemicals as, as a sort of liability that they claim. Right. So here you have a third world victim and you have a first world victim. And the first world victim's life is blatantly more valuable here, in a way that, it's such a deep shame.
Yeah, so that initial settlement between the Indian government and Union Carbide included quashing criminal charges against the officials responsible for the leak. The charges were later reinstated, though, and in September 1996, the court reduced the charges against the accused from Section 304 Part 2, which is culpable homicide, to Section 304A, which is causing death by rash or negligent act. Or, in the words of the victim's lawyer, Karuna, again,
it's in the nature of a traffic accident. We had a traffic accident in Bhopal. As far as the law is concerned, as far as the people are concerned, you have second and third generations of victims who are unable to work, have terrible health, have genetic mutations.
Nothing more than a traffic accident, yeah. It would seem. So yeah. Let's put that into perspective. In 2009, when petroleum giant BP's oil drilling led to a devastating spill in the Gulf of Mexico, then US President Barack Obama and his government held those responsible to pay for the damage and reversed the earlier decision to cap liability in such cases. And it established criminal liability to people and to the environment.
Exactly, and just consider the difference again. In 1989, when Exxon Valdez spilled gallons of oil off the coast of Alaska in the US, the compensation for economic loss and punitive damages was fixed at double the Bhopal gas tragedy amount. So that was some US $1 billion as against the Bhopal relief of US $470 million. Mm. So that's crazy, right? Yeah. And this had been likened to, dead seals of the Atlantic being valued higher than the thousands of humans who lost their lives in Bhopal and who continue to suffer even today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the wake of the Bhopal tragedy, Veerappa Mooli said that there was an urgent need to codify the law of torts to ensure that corporations don't get away with mass murder. Most experts agree that the lack of codified tort law has been severely felt, especially in the wake of this Bhopal case.
Tort law is based on the premise that an individual who causes harm must compensate for that harm. Now, experts argue that one of the reasons Union Carbide set up operations in India is because there wasn't any system to ensure corporate accountability. Class action suits, a powerful tool to ensure corporate ethics, is non-existent in India. Corporates understand the language of money, so whatever they do has to be financially viable for them. So for a Union Carbide to have ensured that safety mechanisms are in place and working, they would have to know that the price for not doing so would far outweigh the costs.
So here we are, 35 years later, and still there is no closure for the victims and, you know, the victims' families. And according to the authors of the book, Bhopal Gas Tragedy After 30 Years, Bhopal was struck not by one, but by two tragedies. Mm. First, the one, of course, that happened immediately, and the other, what has unfolded in the years that have followed. So this second legacy, which people are calling Bhopal Disaster 2.0, that now threatens an even larger number of people than the first one, because many of the pollutants are likely to remain in the environment for hundreds of years, and they will keep spreading unless they are taken out of the site and decontaminated.
Mm. The worst part is cleaning and decontamination of the site has gotten embroiled in legal and political disagreements. So disagreements over how to clean the site, what to do with the waste, who should pay for the cleanups. Is it state government, the centre, or Dow Chemicals who took over Union Carbide? All these factors have stalled progress on this. And so the people of Bhopal continue to suffer as the buck is being passed around. And they're not only suffering physically, but mentally as well.
Yeah, an article in Live Mint stated that the state government's Department of Bhopal Gas Tragedy Relief and Rehabilitation runs 6 hospitals with over 4,000 daily patient visits. And the article says, unfortunately, these hospitals largely ignore the enormous mental trauma caused by the tragedy. Citing government sources, the article claimed that 5 out of 6 of these hospitals have not had a psychiatrist for the last 19 years. And one had a part-time consultant for 12 hours a week till he left last month. So Professor Srinivasa Murthy, an international expert on post-disaster mental health care in Bhopal, said that in his research, he found that 30% of the exposed population were mentally ill in 1985. And even decades later, 80% have not recovered from their mental illnesses. And he found survivors in Latour, Chernobyl, Iraq and other places in the world to be recovering within 2 to 3 years of a mass disaster. So you think about 35 years later, you know, they are anguish, all the trauma that they have faced has not been addressed at all.
Not at all, because, I mean, not only, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, a lot of them face physical disabilities, you know, mothers gave birth to children with physical, you know, deformities and all sorts of things, and some of them with mental, the mental capacity is also incapacitated, mentally incapacitated. Just, and they were all poor people, so they don't even have access to medical care. So, you know, even just to look at their basic needs, that is already not being met. Who's going to look at their mental health needs
across
as well?
Across generations, right?
So Sunita Narayan, she's a journalist and an activist on environmental issues. She summed up the lessons that must be learned from Bhopal pretty well. So she said that Bhopal is about how systems of corporate liability remain very grossly inadequate in a world where technology is both high risk and unknown. So she argues that if we must continue to use high-risk technologies, then we should demand and ensure expensive safeguards are put in place, even if it makes technology uncompetitive. So in the post-Bhopal age, all technologies must pay the real cost of their present and future dangers. And only then will we as a society try and understand the risks better and make better technology choices. So, I mean, all around this is it's a very depressing story, you know, and 35 years later. Sorry, I know I always pick the worst stories, but I think it's important to talk about. And, you know, it is the world's one of the world's worst industrial disasters and the people that are still suffering.
Yeah.
And I think we need to keep the pressure up in whatever way we can.
Yeah, I just hope that 40 years, 45 years later, we aren't still talking about the same issues where we still hear about such a large proportion of the communities not having their needs addressed, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or where regulations are still slack. Yeah. Me being the eternal pessimist, I feel like we will be revisiting the story again. But you're right, it is a failure of people.
Yeah.
It's not so much a failure of technologies, it's a failure of people in recognizing risk, in putting, wanting to invest money to safeguard those risks.
Yeah, I mean, they chose India again because there was a lack regulations, right?
Yes.
Lax regulations. So it was easy to get away with things there if things did go wrong. And you know, as we heard in the clip, you know, there were
cut corners.
Yeah, they cut corners. There were previous gas leaks. They didn't look into it. But again, they were surrounded by poor people with not many rights.
That's right. Trampling all over this.
Trampling all over.
Okay, on that not so cheerful note, we'll call a wrap to this story, but we'll be back after the break for a bit of a pick-me-up, I hope, picking up on a story, some developments that happened over the weekend on social media, which I hope will restore your faith in humanity. I'm not sure.
I don't know. You've seen the stories I pick.
So stay tuned for that story. For now, here's Better Things by The Kinks on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.